If I hold back from being honest with you about an opportunity of growth or something I'm seeing from you that isn't helping you or isn't benefiting you, then what friend am I anyway, right?
Welcome to the No Excuse Pro Podcast, your weekly dose of motivation and actionable advice. If you're a realtor, financial planner, business owner, or anyone who's tired of making excuses and ready to take your success to the next level, you've come to the right place. Join your host, Kevin Brierton, each week as he chats with industry leaders who are going beyond the excuses to achieve their goals. So no excuses accepted. Let's get started.
Hey, Chris. Hey, thanks so much for joining me on the No Excuse Pro podcast. We're here to help people break through the excuses have a breakthrough experience with their excuses. I think people have all these dreams and hopes and aspirations, but then they also have all this baggage with excuses of why they can't get it done. And I think people need to hear this, and all genres, you know, people that are business owners, financial advisors, realtors, lenders need to hear this and need to figure out ways and strategies on how to break through their excuses. I met you a couple years ago. We've been working together now about 6 years, and I really, really like what you do and how you operate. I want you to tell everybody a little bit more about what you do and what led you to your role and what you do now.
Yeah, Kev, first off, I want to say thanks, man. I appreciate you having me on. It's going to be a good time. So, you know, if I go back, you know, just kind of keeping it real quick on the history of my evolution and career, you know, I got into the business right out of college and I kind of fell into it and focused on production and was surrounded by some great, great producers that kind of taught me the ropes. And I had no desire at all to do anything other than run a great production business. And, you know, I had a mentor of mine, you know, years back that kind of brought to light a new way of thinking about, you know, the importance of leadership and the impact you can make on it. And that's what started my journey down, you know, kind of the I guess the challenge with me saying, hey, can I do both or do I have to pick one lane or the other?
And Chris, and really quick, you said you're in mortgage. For everybody that doesn't know, Chris was in mortgage production doing his own business. So I just want to make sure I give that framework for somebody that doesn't
know. Yeah, thanks for clearing that. Find that. I appreciate it. So, you know, after about, I would say it was, you know, 9-10 years in personal production, really started focusing on growing and helping others and helping others build their business. And that led to the evolution of me, you know, leading a branch, a region, a division, and then coming to where we are today, where we started Neo Home Loans and of really, you know, taking a whole nother approach on what it means to be a leader and how do we help empower others to do that as well.
That's awesome, man. So, like, what's the one thing that you think that's made a difference in your success?
Wow, it's a hard one to put it down to one thing. You know, what comes to mind is the people that I've surrounded myself with. And, you know, when I look at, you know, the highs and the lows of my career, and we all have them, right? We have things that go really well, and then we go through challenging times. I think about the people that I was surrounding myself, both in my personal life and in my business life. Right? Were they people that were challenging me to be better? Were they people that were performing at a higher level that I could learn from and aspire to, like, really push myself out of my comfort zone? And one of the common things that I look back is the greatest periods of success that I had, greatest periods of fulfillment, were generally when I was surrounding myself with people that were executing at a high level and holding themselves to an incredibly high standard.
So if somebody doesn't have good people around them, what are they supposed to do? Get rid of all their friends and, you know, find a new friend group? And what if their family? Kind of joke about that, but would it be really, like, are there like barriers that you put up, or are there ways to protect yourself from people maybe that are not the best influence? Maybe they're not bad influence people overall and not making you do illegal activity, but it's just like the creeping in of negative ideas and emotions. How do you, like, protect yourself from that?
Yeah, so I'm going to go back and I want to hit on something that she said, because I think it's really important. It's like, you know, if we look and we evaluate the people that we're surrounding ourselves with, and, you know, there are people that come into our lives for a reason, a season, or a lifetime. right? And you have to be okay with that. And what we needed when we were, you know, 10 and 12 years old compared to what we needed when we were 20, compared to what we need when we're 30 or 40 years old, it can be very different. And so the people that we need to identify that are going to help hold us to a higher level or that we can learn from, it can evolve. And that was a hard thing for me. And I remember thinking, you know, these are my buddies that I've been friends with since we were in, you know, grade school and then through college. And I'm like, I got to stay friends with them forever, right? That's just what you do. You know, you hear the story about people that were lifelong friends. And what I started measuring it against is when I'm around these people, do they make me feel better? Do they push me to be better? Or do they make me laugh? Right? Like there's certain people we keep around because they make you laugh. But in general, like I'm constantly challenging it against that. And it's evolved, right? And the people that I've surrounded myself with, both in my business life and my personal life, have evolved. But you can't just get so stuck in your comfort zone and think that like, okay, this is where I need to stay. Like you constantly need to be pushing yourself out of your comfort zone and looking for people to surround yourself with. So for example, if I'm in a business stage to where like I'm really focusing on how do I scale a business from a leadership standpoint, influence change, I'm going to look for people that have done that in their lives. And I'm just going to be intentional about finding those and making a connection. And generally speaking, somebody that's been through that and done it well, if they can associate that you're in that place where they were 3 years, 5 years, 10 years earlier, a lot of people want to play a part in that. A lot of people want to help. So it's not as hard as we may make it out to be in our mind.
Yeah. Well, this is a huge thing. I want to make sure everybody stops and listens to this. This is a big deal. Like you have to make sure you protect your emotional intelligence from people that are going to ruin it. Because you start having people complain about work, complain about your, you know, their wives, their spouses, they, you know, their kids. You just need to not have it in your life. And I think it's really important to identify, hey, this person, they're fine. I'm happy with it for this situation, but I have to make sure that was a season of life that I move on from. And it's okay to move on. And it's also okay to try to influence change on them by leading by example. And they may or may not change, but I know by leading by example in my life, I've changed lives. That's one of the reasons why I'm doing this podcast is I want to reach a broader audience about the No Excuse Pro podcast. I'm going to bring up my brother right now. He's hopefully listening to this, but this was probably 3 years ago. And he was going through some stuff and he's like, man, I think I'm going to take a job at a motorcycle museum. I said, do it. Like, that's it. Do it. Like, he knows how I am. Like, fine, just go do it. You know, I'm not big on like talking about things like just go do it or don't do it and then stop talking about it. And literally right after he texted me, hey, I put my job offer in. I'm like, oh, all right. Ended up being one of the coolest things he's done. And he's enabled himself to grow and have an impact in this motorcycle museum in California that he would have never had. Now, is the pay great? No. Is it, you know, is it like theoretically, you know, you pencil out, like, is this something I should be doing? Well, maybe, maybe not, but it's had a huge impact positive on him, his life. And having that kind of almost like hard line, like, don't just tell me about something you're going to do because I'm going to hold you accountable within a reason. I'm going to just go do it, you know? And I think we need more of that to hold our friends around us accountable because we could raise them up as well. So don't underestimate, like, you know, just walking away from a friendship just because they may not be the best person. Let's try to lift them up as well. And I think this is exactly why I'm doing this podcast.
I love that, man. And I think there's a couple components to it. One is exactly what you said. We lead by example, right? Like you can be that light for somebody else that they think they couldn't do something, but they're watching you and it's an inspiration. The other is we can't be afraid to have hard conversations and real conversations and hurt somebody's feelings, right? Like if I hold back from being honest with you about an opportunity of growth or something I'm seeing from you that isn't helping you or isn't benefiting you, then what friend am I anyway, right? I'm not actually being a real friend. And so people think, oh, I don't want to cause conflict. I don't want to, you know, ruffle feathers. And it's actually this false sense of equilibrium when you aren't willing to have those hard, real conversations. It doesn't create harmony. It actually creates internal conflict that is just people don't talk about it. So you have to push it just enough and be willing to have those conversations with the people you care about.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think that's extremely, you know, important. And what do you think, like right now, what do you think the biggest challenge is for your clients? Now, your clients are people like me, a mortgage guy, branch, but you could talk about it either in a broader scope, or I just want to understand from your perspective, what is the number one challenge right now that your clients are facing, and how are you helping them solve it?
Yeah. First off, I love that. And I want to clarify who my client is, right? So at the end of the day, in our organization, we serve families and we help them make responsible decisions and become successful homeowners. My client, though, is you. My client is all of our mortgage advisors, our underwriters, our processors. And so when I think about, like, what's the biggest challenge my client is facing right now? We've been through a really, really tough 2 years in our industry. And what's made it even harder is this came on the heels of some of the greatest years financially that a lot of our teams had ever experienced. And so a lot of what I've seen is people kind of set this bar in their self-worth around income levels, around production levels. And now they're measuring themselves against that in this whole sense of self-worth or sense of, like, I'm just not good enough anymore. Or am I really even cut out for this? And so if somebody shows up with that mindset, think about it. Like, how are they really going to be able to convey confidence? How are they really going to be able to show up as the best version of themselves if in the back of their head, they're thinking, I'm actually not that good. I'm not as good as I used to be. And so I don't like to go down this whole path of the woo-woo like mindset side, but I really do believe that helping people understand that, like, your self-worth is not measured by the amount of money you make. Your self-worth is not measured by, you know, how many loans you fund. Your self-worth is measured about how you show up, the lives of the people that you impact. And you can do that in a major, major way. The byproduct when you do that well is all those other things come. But if we're associating what success is with the wrong metrics, you're setting yourself up for this roller coaster in life of, you know, happiness and failure versus, like, what can I control? I can control the way I show up. I can control the way you and I interact and engage with each other. And I can say, I'm going to make a difference every time Kevin and I connect with each other. That's in my control, right? Versus these things out there that are circumstantial to what's going on in the economy, what's going on with mortgage rates, what's going on with XYZ, you name it.
So I love that you brought that up, because I don't think failure really is a real thing. And if you think about it, if you don't get something, you lose the game, you don't get the loan, your client doesn't get their offer accepted, you don't get the job offer that you want, what happens? There's another day that's after that. You know, there's always another Monday, another Tuesday. Just because something didn't happen at that moment doesn't mean you failed, right? I think failure is kind of gives a, like, end point, like a game's over. Well, the game is over. It doesn't mean you could go play another game, right? So failure, I think you got to play it in a zone, right? So you always have to be continuing to improve. And the game is this never-ending long game that we always just continually have incremental growth. And even if we have setbacks, we just grow again from there. It's okay. And every time you go up, you may go up and then down, up and then down, up and down. But you're always continuing to increase that knowledge and help and leaning in and helping people. I just had a great client call that I followed up with. I helped her like 8 years ago. And you don't understand the impact you're having until sometimes these phone calls. We believe here, you know, the Brierton team and Neo Home Loans, that we don't want to just help somebody for 30 days. We're probably more important for the next 30 years to be there for them, to support them. And we check in, take care of our clients. So long story short, this client was like in tears today. 8 years ago, I helped them buy a house, help them with financing. She said, Kevin, do you know what my credit score was today? I was like, well, I don't know, 7 something. I don't know. I figured it'd be good because she was sharing it with me. And She's like, no, it's 800. I just bought a new car. Like, it's like, do you remember that it took me like a year to get my credit score high enough? You helped me all the way through it. I got the house. I got my score up. We ended up making a bunch of money on the house. We relocated. And now I can retire and I can enjoy my retirement. And he's like, it's because of you. And I just get chills about thinking about that. So if you think about failing, if I thought, oh, I failed because I didn't get that loan right then, I didn't help her for a whole year, how much of it less of an impact would I have? And so our job is so much bigger than just, oh, I did a loan this week or I did a loan. Sometimes not doing the loan is even better for the client too. So sometimes not doing the loan can look like failure, not closing the house, not getting the deal could look like failure, but actually it's the right advice for that client. So we have to detach that piece of the numbers, because if we help enough people, it all comes back around. I believe in abundance, and you got to do the right thing. And that's really part of the no excuse ethos, is doing the right thing. Because if you don't, and you just focus on the money aspect of it, it could be very empty inside.
Yeah, I want to call out something you said, because I think there's so much wisdom in it. And I want to make sure that everybody that's watching or listening takes note of this. So failure is a end final destination, if that's how you're looking at it, right? Like, that's a final point that says, okay, we've lost, we give up. But if you just have this as part of the journey, I can absolutely look back and say that some of the greatest growth I've ever had, some of the greatest opportunities I've ever had would be what would be during times that some would call failure. But I've got this just clarity on where I know that I'm going, and like the vision and looking forward, that like, I don't look at temporary setbacks or bumps in the road as like, oh, this is a failure. This is an opportunity. And there's a great book, The Obstacle is the Way by Ryan Holiday. And essentially it reframes our relationship with challenges and obstacles. And instead of looking at them as like, oh my gosh, woe is me. Why is this happening to me? Why are things so tough? If we actually look at the obstacle and say, what am I here to learn from this? What opportunity does this create? We actually can get really excited about when times like this come, because we know that in the face of this, with the right attitude and the right focus, there's growth, there's learning, and there's opportunity that comes out of it.
Well, I think the key is to have a staying power, because the last quarter wasn't pretty financially, especially in the mortgage world, real estate world. But whatever quarter's going on, whatever season of life, you have to be able to have longevity there and make through the tough times, because the tough times probably have most opportunity to be able to grow. And we've seen that over and over and over again. But you have to make sure you're financially smart enough to make sure that you can make it through those times. Because if you're not, it could be a big, it could really weigh on your mental capacity and emotional intelligence on this, because then you're just struggling because you feel like you need to be getting a deal to close. Always, I believe, I don't like backup plans, but I think that when it comes to having longevity in whatever you're doing, you need to have some sort of plan B. And my plan B was always like, well, I can just go work at a restaurant and serve tables and make some money, and I try to keep my bills low enough. I think the challenge with this market in real estate, and financial advisors run into this issue, and business owners who have a run up, and let's say they have a 3 or 4 or 5 year good run, and it's more market based, let's say, and we all want to say we're heroes and we do a good job, but the market definitely impacts things. Keep in mind that lean years can come. I even have one of our friends sold a business, was a CEO, sold his business, chunk of money in the bank. Well, think about what happens when you quit, and if you don't have residual income coming in. Well, just because you have a decent chunk of money in the bank doesn't mean that can also bring you a little bit of fear and worry. So you want to have some sort of contingency plan about what's going to do. I think everybody listening, I think everybody should be saving a minimum of 25% minimum into an emergency account, an investment account. And something I've learned is, don't let that money come out of that account unless it's absolutely necessary. Don't try to not to dip it into it for vacation or this or that. It's like, you should save 25%, 75% for your spending, and really manage and pay off your credit cards every month, So when a storm does come, yeah, you have something to lean on, and don't just go buy a bunch of toys when things are really good.
Yeah. I was in the industry in 2007, 2008, and it was one of those learning lessons for me that basically I thought the party would never end, right? Like we were having such a great run and, you know, doing well. I was young in the business and it ended, right? And I had not planned. I had not saved well. I, again, was living as if this would continue on forever. And I had what was called lifestyle creep, right? I made a little bit more money. I spent a little bit more, made a little bit more, spent a little bit more. And I kept resetting or readjusting my lifestyle based on, you know, this, what was eventually going to be a peak that had to turn at some point. And when I came out of the other side of that, it was like one of those incredible life lessons that, you know, I had to go through some hardship with it, but it changed my relationship with the way I think about saving and investing and spending. And I think it, you know, what you called out is incredibly important. I love the number of 25%, but you have to start somewhere, even if it's 10%. And the way I look at this is most people spend and then whatever they have left over, they say, okay, I'll save that. You have to pay yourself first. So if 10%, 15%, 25% is your number, that goes out first. Then what's left is what you have to spend, what you have to work with. And I think if you can continue that relationship with the way you view saving versus the way you view spending, that avoids a lot of lifestyle creep. And then just watch, is it really necessary? Some of these things that like we hold this association with, oh, if I could just have that, or if I could just get to the point where I could afford that. I'm here to tell you, it will not bring more fulfillment or happiness in your life, but having financial stability, having financial freedom and not having to worry, that will bring you greater happiness and peace than any material thing that you could buy. I think a lot of people just don't know where to start and they look and they say, I just need to make a little bit more money, then I'll start saving. Well, guess what? They keep moving the goalposts again and again and again. So whatever you're making right now, pick that percentage. I don't care how much it is. If you're like, hey, I can only put away $5 or $10 a month, do that. And whatever percentage that is, as income increases, keep that same percentage and try to increase the percentage. And that's what will get you to a point to where you finally have a path towards financial stability and financial freedom.
I love that. I think for our realtor partners out there, you think about one challenge with realtors over the years has been they're 1099 typically, and they don't have the bucket. We're talking about 10, 15, 25% for savings, but you need to be saving 25, 30, 40%, depending on your income for taxes, you know? And so that needs to be like, let's put that away first, right off the top. That should be put away. Then you got to have that emergency fund. Then you have the spending account. And something I've learned over the years is, again, don't touch it, right? So if you grow it or you build that money for your taxes and you build your money for your emergency fund, it better be an emergency. It's not just taking a trip because you feel like you got to go see your buddies in Vegas. It needs to be, or maybe just your family for, you know, holidays or whatever too. Sometimes that you can rationalize a lot of that. You have to keep that money, you know, really for what it is, but do it first. So anybody that's a business owner, 1099, you may not have taxes coming out of your account. And that is one of the biggest issues that I've seen over the years with our realtor partners is that they'll have a good couple year run. And then they already made the money. Now they had a bad 2, 3, 4, 6 months. So how are you supposed to catch up? Because you've already made the money. You've already spent a decent amount of money. Even if you have the money in there for the IRS savings, it's easy to dip into it. So the consistency is important. So what I recommend is definitely saving every month out of it. I think 25% is a push number because even if you're making $1,000, 25% is a low number, right? As it goes up, it's going to be easier to save and you'll save more money on it. But I think it's a really important topic that people need to hear about. But I want to shift gears. I want to keep this in drive time. I got a few more minutes here with Chris. And I really appreciate your support. And I would love your input on what is the vision of the future of your work and the mortgage industry and the real estate industry. Maybe touch a little bit on, you know, maybe what we think of about the NAR settlement. I don't want to go down a rabbit hole there too much, but I would love kind of your input on how people keep their mind straight, stay focused on what they're doing, but also be aware of the future of our industry. What do you think the vision of the future of our industry, real estate and mortgage, is right now?
Yeah. So what's going to be interesting about my answer is it's not too much of a shifting gears from what we were previously talking about. And, you know, for my entire career, we celebrated, recognized, awarded units or dollars funded, right? And it was this weird association that, like, oh, we need to fund more units or we need to fund more dollars. And it just, no matter what number I got to, I never had this like sense of fulfillment, accomplishment, even though, you know, all the awards and everything said that you should be happy, you should be celebrating it. And what I realized is there's more to it than that. It's about what impact we're making on the families we have an opportunity to serve at the end of the day. And we need to be examining ourselves and saying, what value am I providing? And, you know, I go back and when I first got into the business, it was about, yeah, it's all great customer service. It's, can you close fast? We got to be competitive on price. And it's like, everybody says that. That's no longer a differentiator or a value proposition. That's just what you have to do to even have an opportunity to sit down at the table. And so as I think about the future of our industry, and, you know, the NAR settlement's no different here, right? Like, this is going to really cause people to have to clearly be able to articulate and demonstrate the value that they're providing, right? Because our clients, most of the time, they don't know what questions to ask, right? They don't know whether, you know, is this good? Or is this like, what am I supposed to be getting from my mortgage advisor or my real estate partner that I'm working with here? You know, so for us as lenders, the only thing they know to ask is, what's your rate? What's your fees? Right. And so you can't fault them for that, but they don't know anything else to ask because they don't know what to expect out of you. And so on our side, one of the things that really has changed and been a almost realigned me with a purpose behind what we're doing and creative fulfillment is I believe we have a responsibility for the families that we serve to make an impact, not only through education and guidance, but truly helping them become a confident homeowner. And that comes in really making sure that they're educated and they understand not just, hey, we can help you get a loan and here's your options, but why would you choose this option? How is this going to help you build more wealth? Then once you get into the home, how do you protect the asset that you have? How do you protect your wealth? How do you continue to build on that? And so if I look back, I'm not under the idea that I believe that mortgage advisors should be financial advisors or financial professionals. I think what we should be is we should be very well versed. We should be living it ourselves, and we should take the time to educate our clients on how this plays into their greater financial picture, going into what I described with you on how do we help them get to the point of financial freedom, financial security. And we have an opportunity. Our realtor partners do the same because we are helping them with one of the greatest wealth building assets that there is. It all depends on how do we educate them on that? How do we advise them on it? And what trajectory are we setting them on? And so I think if done the right way, our clients, we can change their lives for generations to come. We can change communities, right? And we can change households to where, think about the greatest thing that creates instability in a household. It's financial troubles, right? Like, if I'm worried about, can I put food on the table? Can I provide for my kids, for my wife, for my family? It's really hard for me to show up and put a smile on and be the dad or be the husband that I need to be. So if we can help people understand what that path is and have confidence behind it, it can create greater stability in households, greater stability in communities. And so as I would say to, you know, anybody looking at, you know, what is your value proposition to your client? What impact are you making on their life? What impact are you making on their future? And if we can associate the work that we do, not just with a product, but with the impact that we can make, that to me is where you become invaluable. That to me is where a client says, wow, I never knew that that's what you did, right? Like, I never knew that that's why I would talk to you. But to your point, you described a client that you talked to here, you know, that you've been working with for years, like the difference that you made in their life, right? You set them on a different trajectory. But at the time, you were just helping them get a home or get prepared to buy a home. Right. But think about that. That's the opportunity that if we really zone in on it and we really get clear about how we do it, how we communicate and how we continue to deliver on it, that's an invaluable value proposition.
Well, and that's one of the reasons why, again, I believe in no excuses, right? You can have an easy excuse around oh, I'm just going to go on to the next deal, or why do I need to follow up with them? They're not going to buy again, or they already, you know, whatever the situation is, right? It's easy to say, we don't need to do that. We don't need to up level our game. We don't need to expect more from a mortgage lender or realtor professional. Expecting more is exactly what we need to do. We need that in our business. We should be expecting more from our professionals. Just doing the status quo will all be replaced by robots. Robots can do that. Give me a prequel letter. Income, assets, boom, here's a prequel letter. People don't just need the thing. I mean, look at Uber drivers. Uber drivers are going to be in Arizona. There's self-driving cars everywhere. I mean, it's crazy. So you don't even need a driver, right? But they'll find a way to have some special drivers that will do something special that will be a higher end service, let's say. But I think the key here is we have to understand that there's more than just that service we're providing. It's a long-term value to help people be successful and confident long-term. And that takes a human. I really believe that. We can use a lot of, you know, technology to help us with it and enable us. But having a heart, when you're dealing with people and have a heart and understand this person doesn't qualify, next. Well, no, hold on. It's a family behind the paperwork we're dealing with and helping. That mindset is the difference. You know, we started calling our files families probably close to, 10 years ago now. And it's just a mind shift. No, that family, and you feel, instead of, oh, that's this file, this no name file. No, this family needs to close because of X, Y, and Z. Here's what's going on. It's like, oh yeah, this is a family. So that mind shift's awesome. I think that vision's great, man. I think that's something that needs to be heard. So let's wrap up. I want to talk about technology. I want to shift gears just a tiny bit. And this could be technology. This doesn't have to necessarily be anything specific. It could be whatever tool you want. But are there two resources out there that you think, like, man, if it weren't for these two resources, like, I couldn't do my job or I wouldn't be here today?
Yeah, so really so much of what I'm working on is more from an organizational level. And it's crazy to think that in this age of technology advancing so quickly, our cost to manufacture a loan, meaning everything that goes in it from the human capital to the technology that we use to all the third-party vendors that we use, it's driven to the highest level that it's ever been. It's over $13,000 per loan that we close is our cost on it. Well, who do you think pays that? Our clients pay it at the end of the day, right? And there's so much waste and unnecessary cost. And so a lot of what we're working with right now is technology that is going to, and you called it out, there are certain things we really need the human element to complete. But there are a lot of things that we spend our time doing that we can gain incredible efficiencies by automation, by AI utilization, and other technologies that we're using. So for me, I'm more thinking of it from a bigger picture, from our processes and the experience we have. What can I take that's going to create a lower cost of manufacture, greater efficiency, and a greater level of experience? So that's from a high level. Now, for me personally, one of the things that I utilize is I'm a very process-driven individual. I use a project management tool, and it's an app called Todoist. And what it's helped me do is really be able to categorize what are the things that I need to work on. Because in my mind, if I'm trying to remember all these things, it's overwhelming because you and I'll be having a conversation. I'll have something popping in my mind. I'm like, oh my gosh, I forgot to do that, right? Well, then I'm distracted. I'm not here with you. So I use Todoist to manage everything, whether it's projects at the home, things that I'm doing from a work, gifts that I want to give at some point and put it down, things that I want to remember to read. Everything has a board that I use on there. It has a prioritization. It has a timeline. So what it does is it gets it out of up here, puts it down there. And so it allows me to have such a greater confidence that, like, the things I need to prioritize, they have a place, they have a time, and I have a single source that I can stay on top of managing the projects in my life and the projects in my business.
So is that an app, a website? Where do you get that?
Yeah. So they have both. There's a web-based version of it and there's an app. So I've got it on my phone. So I can literally be out anywhere on my phone and I can drop something in there. I've got it up when I'm at work on my computer screen. So I'm, you know, adding tasks. It's like, hey, if I know that I need to, you know, follow up with you after this, and it's not a calendared event, I'll put it on there for a certain date or a certain time that I'm like, hey, I need to follow back up with Kevin on seeing how everything turned out with the podcast.
That's very cool. I think that's important. I think I started using something similar to that a while back when the issue is a lot of people use Outlook for your task manager. And I know Outlook actually, or Microsoft actually bought Wunderlist, which was amazing. Now it's built into Microsoft. So it's a little less amazing. It's pretty good, but it's like built into the task manager inside of Outlook. If nothing else, I would use that if you guys have that. But it's nice to be something that's separate from your inbox, your email inbox, yep. Because a lot of people use email as their task list. And some people say, don't ever use email as your task list. And some people are like, that's just how I use it. And I don't think there's a right or wrong way to do it, but I will tell you, as much as you can get out of using your inbox as your task list, I think that's important. And I think putting like a task that's like, hey, I need to do this next week, but I'm going to put it on the task list that's going to show up to me, not today. Like, I don't want to have a big, long running list of tasks, but it's going to show up to me in a week from now. So it's like, okay, now I can offload it from my brain and I didn't forget about it, but it's not there. You can use CRMs for this, the task list. I use a tick, tick, like a clock, tick, tick. Great system. Same thing as a task list on there. And I think that's a good little takeaway for everybody today. Man, Chris, I appreciate you. I'm excited to see what you're doing at Neo and, you know, really impacting lives and doing an awesome job. If there are any loan officers or, you know, loan partners that, you know, maybe underwriters that have, you know, are struggling where they're at, or, you know, how would they reach you? Like, if they're looking to maybe have a conversation about Neo and what it can do for them, how would they reach you?
Yeah, I love that, Kevin. I appreciate you asking that. And again, you know, I shared with you a little bit about where I see the future of our industry going. And, you know, if that did land for anybody and there are questions, I would be happy to take on a call or a conversation around it. You can call me directly at 310-938-5529 or email me at chris.ledley@neohomeloans.com.
Awesome, guys. Well, I appreciate you guys listening. Thank you so much, Chris, for jumping on. It was really a pleasure talking to you. And if anybody wants a mortgage strategy call, you can always go to mortgagestrategycall.com and we can help you with a mortgage strategy, whether you're a business partner or a buyer or seller out there in this marketplace today. Thanks again for watching and have an awesome day.
And there you have it, folks. Another enlightening episode of the No Excuse Pro podcast is in the books. A heartfelt thank you to today's guests for sharing their wisdom and to you, our valued listeners, for spending your time with us. If you're ready to ditch the excuses and level up, make sure to subscribe and find all our episodes at noexcusepropodcast.com. Don't forget, the only thing standing between you and your goals is the story you tell yourself. So no excuses accepted here. Take action and make it happen.